Hey, this is Jason Aaron, writer of Thor, Southern Bastards, Action Comics, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you are listening to the Oblivion Bar podcast.
Welcome to the Oblivion Bar podcast with your host, Chris Hacker, and Aaron Knowles.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 152 of the Oblivion Bar podcast, the official podcast of the Fantasy Shop in St. Charles, Missouri. I'm your elderly anthropomorphic duck obsessed with money, Chris Hacker. And joining me this week is the wildest and most enthusiastic Ninja Turtle, my co-host and BFF, Aaron Knowles.
Wise man say, forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza.
That's right. Welcome, everybody, back to the Oblivion Bar podcast. This week on the show, we are talking to comic book legend, bona fide, 100% certified.
That's correct, Aaron.
Aaron, yeah. Legend, an icon, a living icon, Aaron Knowles is here on the show. Welcome, everybody. Aaron Knowles to the show. Yeah, there he is.
No, not me. Oh. Another Aaron.
Oh, another Aaron. Yes.
Wrong Aaron.
Oh, okay, yeah, you're right. Actually, it's another God. Aaron.
Do I have to do everything?
You're not even in this conversation. Jason Aaron joins the Oblivion Bar podcast.
Carrying this team.
That's right. Everyone knows Aaron is he's the brain and the beauty here of the Oblivion Bar podcast.
I like you.
This week on the show, we are talking to Jason Aaron. Aaron, as you know, it's going to be weird me saying Jason Aaron, Aaron. I need to levy that. But Jason Aaron is one of my favorites.
How many Aarons are there? There's Aaron. Jason Aaron.
You're like Mario. Yeah, exactly. Luigi Mario.
If I married Jason Aaron, I'd be Aaron.
Is Jason Aaron's Jason middle name Aaron. Aaron?
It might be.
Jason Aaron. Okay, whatever. What are we doing? All right. Jason Aaron is joining the show for the second time, Aaron. This is the second time that Jason's been on the show. The first time he was on, we were talking mostly about Punisher and his Avengers run. He has since kind of moved on from his time over at Marvel, which he had been there for a long time, almost 20 years he had been at Marvel. And in this conversation, sort of the main theme is that we talk about how Jason is sort of making a transition, a major transition, into a new era of his career. He calls it in the conversation the second act. He says, hopefully it's not the third act. Hopefully it's the second act, to where he can kind of spread his wings and try a bunch of different new titles that he's wanted to.
Clearly.
a wide variety of different types of not only IP, but creator-owned stories, across all publishers. So we talked mostly about Uncle Scrooge, which is his upcoming one-shot over at Marvel Comics. He's not completely left Marvel. He still has one title over at Marvel. He also is currently writing Action Comics, Batman Offworld over at DC, Once Upon a Time at the End of the World, and Berserker, A Face Full of Bullets over at Boom Studios. And then I think what most people are most excited about is his upcoming Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles relaunch over at IDW. So very exciting conversation. Aaron, you were sorely missed here in this conversation with Jason.
I am the TMNT Ninja Turtles guy, and I was unable to be. I think because you were doing this one when I was at my retirement ceremony, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were getting out of the army.
So I had to weigh my options, and fuck, it still sucks.
Talk to
it
Jason Aaron. Sucks. Be eternally attached to the United States government.
Yeah,
Aaron, government. Yeah, I think you chose right. You chose right.
Yeah.
We'll have Jason on the show again at some point. You can pick his brain on the TMNT. Before we get into that conversation, Aaron, I want to ask you just kind of broadly, since you weren't there for it, what is kind of like your relationship to the Turtles, firstly? I know you're a big fan, but just like, what was the origin of that? And also, are you excited? Are you going to be following along with this upcoming Jason Aaron run at IDW?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm a big fan of Jason Aaron in general, mm-hmm. and what he does to stories. And I feel like if you don't really subscribe to what he's doing, you're going to be missing out on some really cool and dynamic ideas that really only he can come up with. You know, earlier before the show started, you and I were talking about some of the things that he's already implemented into, let's just one thing, Marvel Cinematic Universe, all right? So he created Mighty Thor. So we know that, he added in, he created Gore the God Butcher. Like, he basically created Love and Thunder. Like, that was his storyline, turned into that movie.
The comic is way better, by the way, everybody. Absolutely. Like, eternally better.
Comic is way better. So, like, the obviously the source material is way better than what was inspired by it. Mm-hmm. But that's all him, baby.
Yeah.
It's all me, baby. So, like, that's what I'm saying. It's like, if you do not subscribe to what Jason Aaron is creating, you are going to miss out on some very, like, awesome turns and additions to whatever universe, whatever sandbox he's playing in.
Yeah. Whether it be Uncle Scrooge or the TMNT or EC Comics, which was recently announced, or Berserker with Keanu Reeves. Like, he's doing it all.
Just talking about, for instance, like we were saying, you haven't read it yet, but you want to, Batman Outer Worlds.
Offworld.
Like, I've only read a few first couple of issues. I got to get my hands on I'm pretty sure I have the rest of them, but I got to get my hands on the rest of them. Mm-hmm. I've read the first three, and it is batshit crazy, pardon the pun. it's Batman, but he literally goes off world
into space
and out of shirt, because he's like no shirt most of the time.
Nice.
But he's like doing shit that we've never seen him do before in an extraterrestrial like environment, all these different like he's learning how to fight new aliens, new creatures. It's insane. Like, I love it. So I'm again, but you asked me, I digress. You asked me about my relationship with the Turtles.
Mm-hmm.
All right. My relationship with the Turtles has been, I've been a fan since I was a small boy.
A wee pup.
A small boy. And not just the original cartoons, you know, from the inception in Mirage Comics, you know, dark and grimy and dingy, you know, things like that, to the cartoons, to the video games, to the movies, to the movie, you know, Turtles in Concert, you know, like all this
Mutant
stuff.
Mutant Mayhem recently.
Mutant Mayhem, like all of it. Like, I love what the Turtles are. The Turtles are much like the X-Men, much like specific characters in the MCU, much like a lot of characters in the DCU. They span these timelines.
Yeah.
And no matter where they are on a timeline, they're just fun to read.
Yeah, I actually say that in our conversation. We talk about it, Jason and I, about how the TMNT are some of the most flexible characters in fiction, right? Like, we're thinking of characters like Daredevil or Batman, who, depending on who's writing it, is your interpretation of the character. And I think the TMNT team is among that. Whoever gets their hands on that property, they can kind of mold them and twist them in ways that are not done well with a lot of other characters.
I have a theory about that, and like why they're so malleable like that.
Okay.
And versatile.
Why is that?
And it's because they are never in their own element.
Okay.
They are forever out of their element because they are mutant turtles as teenagers. Teenagers themselves are already out of their element and never really like stagnant. They're never really docile or static. They're always kind of changing, moving, doing whatever, discovering.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have mutants who are growing up and they're in the city. They're in this massive city of New York. I mean, you can really take the turtles out as a team who are learning to be brothers, who are learning to be crime fighters, who are learning to be a family, and put them into any circumstance, and it's just fun to see how they react. It's interesting to see how they react.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the best parts about TMNT is to see all of the personalities, Raphael, Leonardo, Michelangelo, and Donatello, how they bounce off each other and how they react to situations individually and as a team together. And again, exactly. We talk about that in the conversation. Excited for everybody to check that out here in just a moment. Couple notes right off the top here. Patreon.com/OblivionBarPod. If you want to support the show, that's where you do it. You could have access to The Grid, which is our weekly bonus podcast, episode transcripts, what Aaron and I use to interview people like Jason Aaron, or just stay on track because we will often deviate. That's what we do here on the show. The transcript is our
segue.
It's our guiding map. That's the way that we keep this show organized, if you will.
If we didn't have this show would be a failure. Like, Chris would be like pulling his own beard hair out, one follicle at a time, and I would just be constantly just like going off on, like I am right now.
Early access to these episodes you're listening to right now, a special shout out at the end of each Oblivion Bar episode, which Aaron will do here in just a bit, and it is the best way to support the Oblivion Bar podcast. So once again, that is patreon.com/OblivionBarPod. Aaron, tell the people what we are getting into at the end of April. Big, big news.
I just want to say also the perfect example of why we need a transcript is the Patrick Horvath Beneath the Trees episode.
Should we tell the people about that a little bit before we go on to our panel?
Fine. Like, I'll cover it real quick. self-admitting I have a problem. I really went off on this like weird like gore torture porn gore discussion with Patrick Horvath, and it was really interesting.
Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees.
Yeah, it was really a good conversation.
Yeah,
but I got lost in the weeds really bad because I just like started, instead of looking at the transcript, I'm looking at Patrick and I'm just having this conversation like it's just me and him. So
it was a great conversation, and yeah. I'm glad that you went on the tangent. In the moment I was like, Aaron, look at the next question. Like, look down. Yeah. Look at the screen. But
it is
post,
great. He's like, look at the
But after it was done, and I think I even after we were done recording, I was like, bro, like you gotta bring it in. But when I was editing it, I was like, this is a good conversation. Like, this is a good question. Patrick was feeling it. Like, it totally made sense. So, and while we're on the topic, before we get into our panel, before we get in this conversation with Jason Aaron, good friend of the show, Eisner winning creator, Christian Ward has told me multiple times on the show that our dynamic is the best part about the Oblivion Bar. Like, the fact that I am this tightly wound, analytical, stick to the transcript.
I am a meat puppet.
And Aaron is just like, he's like Doug from Up. He's like, ball. And that keeps it fresh. It's fun. It gets us on these side, our self-proclaimed side quests that we're on right now. It brings in
a good couple's costume.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
We should do that. You should be the old man and I'll be Doug.
The wilderness must be explored.
Okay. So to actually get to the freaking news here, C2E2. 2024. Yours truly, your dynamic duo, your hosts with the most, will have another panel at C2E2 with the First Issue Club and the Short Box Podcast. It's basically going to be like a live podcast happening in the moment, but it's going to be a really fun discussion, just like we had back at New York Comic Con last year. It's going to be Friday, April 26th at 11:15 a.m. If you're in, near, or around the Chicago area, you should try and make it to C2E2, room S405-B, to hear a live recording of our three shows getting together and talking comics. We'll have exclusive C2E2 stickers, shirts, and posters made by our good friend Elliot Dixon. So if you guys have seen, we teased it, we posted it, it's all over the place. If you came to our one at New York Comic Con, you'll see the cool, we had a special edition holographic version of our poster we had designed into a sticker. It was a holographic sticker, super badass.
Yep.
And so visit the link in our show notes for more details on the panel. We would love to see you there. Come say hi. We're going to try and get a bunch of good, cool stuff to give away. And we just love giving free shit away.
It's very exciting. Cannot wait to hang out with Botter over at the Short Box and Andy and Greg over at the First Issue Club. So exciting to get all of us together. And again, talk about comics, talk about podcasting, all the things. So without further ado, Aaron, let's quit the preamble. Let's quit the segues. Let's get back on track, because that's what I'm here for. I'm here to bring it in. You know what I mean?
It's being on a segue.
And Aaron just whizzing by on a segue. Let's get into this conversation with comic creator Jason Aaron.
Hey, everybody. Our sponsor for today's episode is G Fuel, the official energy drink of esports. Whether you're a casual gamer, a content creator, an everyday Joe, or an esports pro, G Fuel's sugar-free, antioxidant, and vitamin-fortified, focus-enhancing, and high-performance energy products will give you the edge you need to fuel your grind. No sugar, no gluten, no crash, just natural, clean vitamin energy that's available in over 40 lip-smacking flavors. While stocking up at gfuel.com, use our code OBP at checkout for 10% off your entire order. That's OBP at checkout. G Fuel. Performance energized.
And now, this week's special guest.
Joining us this week on the show is the Eisner Award-winning comic book writer behind titles like Southern Bastards, The Avengers, Conan the Barbarian, Vertigo's Scalped, The Punisher, Marvel's 2015 relaunch of Star Wars, and his iconic 7-year epic on Thor. Recently, he has been hard at work on newer titles like Action Comics and Batman Offworld at DC Comics, Once Upon a Time at the End of the World and Berserker, A Face Full of Bullets at Boom Studios, Uncle Scrooge and the Infinity Dime at Marvel Comics, and the highly anticipated Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles at IDW Publishing. It is my pleasure to welcome Jason Aaron back onto the Oblivion Bar podcast.
How's it going?
Thanks so much for being here, Jason. Appreciate it. I wanted to start off the conversation by asking kind of a very broad question, which is, you are a proud resident of Kansas City. So how was Planet Comic Con this past weekend?
It was great. I mean, it was crazy busy. You know, I wasn't really there last year. I kind of popped in for a hot minute. So this was my first time setting up there in a couple of years. And man, it was packed. It was packed right away on Friday. It was packed on Saturday. It was so packed on Saturday, I heard that all the flushing of the toilets caused a drop in water pressure in Kansas City for like a 4-block radius. And wow. The city had to like jack up the water pressure so that then once the convention ended, you know, manhole covers were blowing up out of the street. So yeah. created a plumbing situation in Kansas City. That's how big a show it was.
This was a bigger year for Planet Comic Con. This is an anniversary year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's my, you know, my local show. So I've been going, I haven't been here 25 years, but close. I mean, I moved in the summer of 2000. So I've been going to Planet since right after I moved, you know, just as starting out as a fan. Met Marv Wolfman and George Perez there and met tons of great creators over the years. And then that was one of the very first conventions I ever did as a professional. And I've been there in some capacity every year since.
It's funny you bring those two icons up at the top of the conversation, because that was sort of the basis of one of our conversations we had previously on the show. The first time you were on the Oblivion Bar, you talked about how you had met George Perez. I think it was at Dragon Con when you were much younger, and how that was so impressionable for you as a young comic book reader. And it's funny to kind of go full circle and kind of be at a con as a creator with those two, again, legends.
Yeah. George was the first, pretty sure the first comic creator I ever met, like the first creator. I mean, he was my favorite artist. He was the first artist I could ever identify. You know, I would see another cover issue by George and be like, oh, that's the guy who did New Teen Titans. So he was the first artist I ever followed from book to book. And then first person I ever stood in line for with a big stack of comics, a huge stack of comics, to where, you know, he asked me to get back in line because I had so many to get signed by him. And then some of those I got back in those days, they like he signed them just with like a ballpoint pen, like on like in the inside front cover.
Oh, yeah.
So some of those same one, you know, like my Titans number one, I got signed by him again at Planet, you know, years later, where he signed it on the cover with a Sharpie. So I've got some double signed ones, which are great. He was super, super, super nice. And that his work and that book in particular was a big part of me becoming a comic fan. And I think even now, I think when I envision a script in my head, it's always drawn by George Perez.
Wow. Yeah. George is missed terribly right now among fans and everyone. And to kind of speak on that a little bit, Scott Snyder was that for me. I think when I first started reading comics was around the New 52 era of comic, you know, in the comic book world. And I very vividly remember bringing like the first 15 issues of that Court of Owls run, but you know, with him and Greg Capullo, and similar story, like he was just the nicest ever, but I think they had a cap in terms of how many books you could actually have signed. Cause of course they were like on top of the comic world with that run. So I think I maybe was able to get like two or three signed, and then I had to either get back in line or pay something. So
yeah, it's great. I mean, I you know, I find I'm 51 years old now, and I vividly remember all the encounters I had with creators as a kid, where they were the people who were incredibly kind and gracious, which was you know, most everyone, but I particularly remember George. I remember Mike Allred. Remember Steve Rude. Greg Rucka, Garth Ennis, like those were creators who stood out to me of, you know, from when I was a little kid to, you know, when I was a young guy trying to figure out how to break into comics, like all those people were super, super nice to me. Mm-hmm. And you remember that. And I always think about that as a creator, you know, cause I still remember all those bits from when I was a kid.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back a little bit. So you mentioned, you know, obviously being in Kansas City for almost 25 years now. Have you adopted the Chiefs as your team since being there? Are you a dedicated Chiefs fan?
I mean, on the one hand, no. Like I mean, there's a Steelers helmet and I'm looking at it in my living room right now. So I'm still a Steelers fan.
Oh, sure.
I've certainly cheered. I've bought some Chiefs shirts the recent years. You know, my partner's a Chiefs fan, so she gives me grief if I'm not wearing a Chiefs shirt in the playoffs or the Super Bowl. And so I definitely have cheered for them on their Super Bowl runs the last few years, and they're fun to watch. You know, Mahomes is just insane, the stuff he can do. So they've been fun to watch. And I went to the Super Bowl parade. So I do my part as a Kansas City resident. But, you know, if it came down to where the Steelers and the Chiefs were playing in the AFC Championship game, I can't say I'm going to be wearing that Chiefs shirt. You know, sorry, I've been rooting for the Steelers since I was a kid.
It's funny because Kansas City is one of those cities that feels like it's us against the world. You know, they still got that mentality a little bit where, like, when you're from KC, you know, a lot of people, you'll know it in the first 10 minutes of having a conversation with someone who's from Kansas City. They will let you know eventually, right? And to kind of speak on what you were saying there a moment ago about the Chiefs and kind of the run they've been on, it's one of those things where I'm a Ravens fan. I have been a fan since I was young.
Oh, geez. Don't tell me that.
I know. I know. I've been hurt twice in the last 10 minutes, both that you're a Steelers fan and that we lost to the Chiefs in the AFC Championship this year.
Hey, the Steelers just signed Patrick Queen today, too. So
I know. And we got Derrick Henry, but I'm very upset about Queen getting there. But I was going to say, though, it's in terms of like Kansas City, you, even if you're not a fan of Mahomes and Kelce and all these guys, you have to like admire that we're watching a dynasty happen in real life. Like it's happening in front of us, and it would be sour to not be aware of their greatness.
Oh, absolutely. I think but the Chiefs have reached the point now where have become so good, you're going to start to be hated by everybody else around the country, right? I mean, the Patriots hit that point. I'm from Alabama, so I'm an Alabama fan. So we hit that point, you know, years ago under Nick Saban. So you just got to be prepared for everyone who's not from that place to despise you. And I think the Chiefs are at that point. But at the same time, this year, you know, you brought so many other new fans on board through Taylor Swift, which was awesome. You know, I see like Mitch Gerads on Instagram wearing Chiefs jersey now.
Yeah.
Which is great. I'm someone who was all pro Taylor Swift, bringing new fans to football.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone listening right now, we will get to comics eventually. I just have one more football related question for Jason here. You know, you just mentioned you're a diehard Crimson Tide fan. Everyone that's met you or heard you talk knows this. How has your mental health been since learning of Nick Saban retiring?
I mean, it's been touch and go. I'm not going to lie. Like I was
ins and outs of just like fading of health.
Yeah, I mean, I get alerts on my phone from some of the sports sites I follow. So I was, you know, standing here in my kitchen. It was like what three o'clock, 3:30 that day when my phone popped up with that first alert of, you know, Nick Saban just told his team he's retiring, and it felt that day. That was a good day where I think my first Superman issue, my first issue of Action Comics was out that day. So I was like jazzed. It's like, oh, people seem to be like it. I'm so excited. And then come 3 o'clock and it felt a little like a family member had died. And then it was, you know, it was the day you knew was going to come, but it turns out I was not prepared for it to be this year. And it's still, you know, that was a crazy week where I don't think I've ever been so obsessively following Twitter as I was that way, because just all the sports writers I follow, where I'm refresh, like getting any update. Did they, you know, who's the top candidate now? Who said they're not taking the job? Like who's on the plane to Tuscaloosa? So there's a lot of uncertainty, but I you know, and still is, but I feel good about Kalen DeBoer and the staff he's put together. And I'm excited to see what he can do with Alabama's resources, but it's never going to be the same. You know, there's no, the game's not the same. The stuff coaches have to deal with is so much more complicated and demanding now. And there'll never be another coach quite like Nick Saban. So the golden age has ended, but we can still enjoy, you know, the glories of the silver age, whatever they may be.
Saban essentially created the college football that we have today. Like what kind of the format that we're in right now was to sort of level the playing field that Saban had created with Alabama football. And to contextualize this for anybody who's listening right now who has absolutely no idea what we're talking about or who we're talking about, go back in time to when you found out that Jason Aaron was leaving Thor And that's how Jason feels right now that Nick Saban has retired from Alabama. That's essentially the exact comparison that I can come up in my brain.
I mean, I appreciate the, I mean, that's the most, comparing me to Nick Saban is the most flattering thing anything's ever said about me. I don't think I can live up to that.
Well, you know, as I mentioned in the intro, and I should note that I'm still absolutely bewildered by this, but you are working on not only an incredible amount of titles, all of which are wildly different from each other, but on top of that, you've sort of planted your creative flag at most of the major publishers across the comic book landscape, minus Image Comics. And you know, you were exclusive at Marvel for many years, so it feels like this is your well-deserved time to sort of play the field and try some new things. What's been the most exciting aspect of working all these new stories at these other publishers?
The most exciting aspect really of not being exclusive anymore is just being able to do whatever I want, right? To sort of take any phone call that comes my way. I mean, it really hasn't been a case of me chasing after a bunch of stuff. It's just sort of, once it became known that, hey, I'm available, you know, then the phone started to ring. I mean, the DC stuff was definitely something I pursued and that I, you know, knew I wanted to do a Batman project, but Action Comics was something that kind of popped up and got offered to me, and Berserker and Turtles and even Scrooge, everything. Those were all just things that kind of fell into my lap. So it's nice to be able to be in a position where I can say yes to any of those things I want. So I think last year after, you know, my exclusive expired late 2022, I was still kind of winding down Avengers, and I knew that was going to be the end, at least for a bit, of me doing ongoing work for hire titles after, you know, 15, 16 years solid of doing 2, 3, sometimes 4 of those at a time. I knew I wanted to jump off that train. And so kind of once that was done, I enjoyed getting back to travel and, you know, for the first time since the pre-pandemic days, and did a lot more shows, did some cool international shows, and enjoyed kind of having less deadlines and working a little less, and didn't have that consistent, you know, didn't have as many mouths to feed every month. Then at some point over the course of last year, I, you know, realized I should probably do some more work, you know, because turns out, you know, I don't get paid when I don't do things. So more things came along. I said yes to more things, most all of them like shorter minis and one shots, and then find that, you know, suddenly I've got a lot of stuff to do, and it's all kind of hitting at once. So the last few months have been really busy, but exciting that I'm getting to jump from an array of characters I feel like no one in the history of comics has gotten to write, you know, to go Batman to Uncle Scrooge to Superman to Berserker to the Turtles to, you know, even a couple more that haven't been announced yet. I just felt like surely no one has done this sequence of characters in a 2-month time span. So that part was, you know, it's been very busy, but just constantly creatively rewarding, you know, from character to character.
Did you just say that there's some things that haven't been announced yet?
Yeah. There's a couple. There's 3. There's maybe 3 other things I've been working on in some shape or form that haven't been announced yet.
Now, do you equate that to having just a little bit more free time now that you're not over at, you know, Marvel? Or do you feel like this just like this new wave of creativity kind of hitting you all at the same time?
A little of all that, I guess. And also, again, just the door being able to be open to any of that. And some of it is you all these things sort of pop up. I mean, it's like a typical freelancer thing where you suddenly that's an option. I can do anything. And then everything, all these cool things are available and you want to say yes to every single one of them. Mm-hmm. But then you have to find the time and the headspace to actually do them. So I've been still in the do them point, but in 2 days time, I will be retiring to the happiest place on earth to recharge my batteries. My favorite place one of my favorite places on the planet. I'm going back to Disney World for short trip for spring break for my kid. So that'll be part of my, you know, relaxing a little bit this month before diving into with a lot of these things we're talking about are kind of done and written. And I'll be, you know, focusing on Turtles and focusing on a couple of other things that I'll be working on the rest of the year.
Now, can you write this trip to Disney off on your taxes based on the fact that you're doing Scrooge? Like, you could chalk it up as like, this is some Scrooge related.
That's a good question. Yeah. Let me ask my tax guy about that. I mean, if there was more Scrooge related content at the parks, there's really not. I have gotten my picture with Scrooge there before. He used to pop up at Animal Kingdom. I don't know if he still does, but I think they have there's a DuckTales treasure hunt around Epcot, I believe. Mm-hmm. But I've never done that. So maybe even though I've already written the one shot, maybe I could still swing it like, yeah, I need to go explore Scrooge's stomping ground to get in the headspace to properly.
Taxes aren't due until April. We still have time. So
sure.
Well, and I want to just kind of ask like a very odd question here, but if we could travel back to the early 2000s version of Jason Aaron, who was writing The Other Side and Wolverine and Scalped, and ask him, what's your best pitch for Uncle Scrooge? What do you think he would say?
the version of me from the
early 2000s. Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't have had one. I had maybe, I can't remember if I had read any Don Rosa stories by that point. I feel like I read a couple in issue form. I feel like I bought a couple. Or maybe I was just at some point I bought, when the Fantagraphics released all those hardcovers, I bought every one of them and read every one of them with my kid as he was growing up. So maybe I'd started doing that by that point. I can't remember when those hardcovers started coming out. And that was really where my love of Scrooge came from. You know, I mean, I grew up, I loved the DuckTales as a kid and I've always been a big Disney fan, but I'd never read any of the Bark stories. Like reading those Don Rosa stories, the more we read, it just dawned on me more and more like, oh man, these are like really good. You know, this is, these are not just cute talking duck stories. Like these are great, really smart, really action packed adventure stories, you know, globe trotting adventure stories, adventures through all these different parts of history, gorgeously drawn, just rich, rich stories. So by the end of the reading all those, I'd become the biggest Scrooge fan. Then went back and, you know, I've read a bunch of the Bark stories too. And I actually, the Don Rosa is always at Planet Comic Con, and I got to sit with him a couple of days ago and talk to him for almost an hour, and we had a really great conversation. And it was important to me, despite, you know, he's got a complicated history with Disney, to say the least, and a lot of strong feelings that, as you rightly deserved, in terms of how his relationship with them went, and had feelings about what he had heard about, you know, Marvel doing this new Uncle Scrooge comic. Though he had I think some of the articles I saw published on, you know, non-comic sites, you know, like you see sometimes things get filtered through this game of telephone. They made it seem like, you know, Scrooge comes to the Marvel universe, like it's gonna, we're doing a story where Scrooge is hanging out with Spider-Man or something, which is absolutely not the case. So it was important to me to communicate to him, like, look, you know, whether, if you want to read this book, I'll bring it to you. If you hate it, throw it away. I get it. Like, no sweat. But it was important that he heard from me that this was written, this was my idea, this is the story I wanted to tell, and it was written with 110% of love for him and the stories that he told, because they, you know, have a special place in my heart. One, just because they're so damn good, but also because it was a thing my son and I shared, and, you know, he's 18 now, and still he and I talk about those stories. Mm-hmm. So in short, this is a long answer to your question, but this is an important topic to me, and really excited that people are excited about me doing Scrooge. And I feel like the average Marvel fan, my average fans, probably never read a Carl Barks story, probably never read a Don Rosa story. So for me, the ultimate goal of this book is, you read it, you realize some of the same stuff I realized from, you know, reading The Life of Time as a Scrooge McDuck by Don Rosa and all his stories, is that, oh man, I'm missing out. Mm-hmm. That I haven't read more Scrooge, and there is this wealth of awesome stories there waiting for you.
Yeah, I think maybe the confusion came from the solicitation, which says Scrooge embarks on a time-honored Marvel adventure as he explores the multiverse to stop a twisted Scrooge from becoming the all-powerful and incomprehensible rich Scrooge above all. So right. I guess I can, you know, of course, Comic News and the Bleeding Cools of the world, and, you know, all of these like hearsay articles, you know, the grabby titles and such. I'm sure, sure some things were lost in translation, but that does kind of sound like maybe possibly we could see Scrooge interacting with Daredevil and Wolverine somehow.
Well, I, you know, I'll tell you right now, you don't. Like, that is not.
It is clear in the record.
Is it a different kind of Scrooge story? Yes. Is there like a Marvel flair to it? Yes. In terms mm-hmm. of the, certainly the amazing lineup of cover artists, in terms of the kind of story it is, in terms of the way I write it. Yes, there's a different, there are different elements to it, but it is absolutely, you know, fully a Scrooge story within the same continuity as past Scrooge stories and paying homage to them while, you know, trying to do something a little bit different. But no, you won't see Scrooge hanging out with Peter Parker or the Mighty Thor.
I feel very fortunate too, as a young 90s kid, you know, growing up watching DuckTales, and it's probably no surprise to most listeners right now, but you are one of my favorite writers in comics. Daniel Warren Johnson is another one of my favorite writer artists in world of comics. And the fact that we have both, you know, you on Uncle Scrooge and now TMNT, and of course Daniel over at Transformers, it feels like early 90 comic fans are eating good.
Yeah, Daniel's been killing it on Transformers. That book is really, really good. I was not a big Transformers guy as a kid. I was G.I. Joe and He-Man. Those were my things. So I'd love it when a creator can come in and make me care about characters I have no previous investment in, right? Like I don't come to the table in love with the Transformers. I don't really know one from the other. I know Optimus Prime and the one who turns into a giant gun, but that's it. I don't know. Like, I don't know anything else. So if I can come into that and understand it and you can make me feel emotionally invested, that makes me really excited when a creator is able to do that. And Daniel, I feel like could do that with anything, but also, you know, the important part is that even if I'm not invested coming to the table, he is, right? And that his passion and investment bleeds through every single page of that. So I think that's what we're all should be doing book to book, right? Is showing our work and putting on the page, this is why you should care about this character. And Transformers is a great example of that.
That's kind of a great transition into what I think most folks are excited for, which is your upcoming TMNT run at IDW. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Alpha 1 hits shelves on June 5th. And you'll be teaming up with Tom Waltz and artists Chris Burnham and Gavin Smith. And this will essentially act as a bridge between Sophie Campbell's outstanding run and your eventual run. And this is a fair warning here. Here's a long-winded warning set up for my question here for Jason. I know we can't talk about specifics with this series, and I'm not going to ask you who your favorite turtle is,
I'd rather not, but sorry, go ahead.
I wouldn't ask you regardless, because first of all, I know that you have to kind of play, you can't play favorites, but these are like your kids now, so you can't play favorites.
Are you going to ask me who my favorite turtle is?
I'm not going to. I will I refuse to ask you that question, although I think it should be Raphael, if I'm being honest, but I'm not going to ask. But gotcha. I am curious about one aspect, and those Mirage Turtle books felt and still feel sort of grimy and unkempt and sort of like the New York City of the late 1980s. However, if you've been to New York City recently, it's wildly different from what it used to be. Much cleaner, sort of corporate driven, the unfortunate displacement of the working class and low income families within the city. And it feels as though the New York City that the Turtles were born into and almost acts as a character within itself in these stories no longer exists. So my question for you is, your first arc is called Return to New York, which I found both enticing and intriguing. How much of the start of your initial run, without spoiling anything, has you setting up a new status quo for these heroes?
Yeah, that's a really great question and a great point about New York. And I think that title, you know, I was very conscious of choosing that title and what it all meant. And there's not a simple meaning to that title, right? It's not like they've been away from New York and they're coming back. There's a lot that I think will reveal itself as we go. And yeah, I think what New York City means, that's a good point. I think that's part of it. I mean, the first time I ever went to New York was in the late 80s as I was in middle school, and we did like a summer trip where we went to Washington, D.C. and New York. And this was my first time ever in New York. And it was still in the days when, you know, there was like a porn shop, right? Like right next to a couple doors down from McDonald's.
Yeah.
And so by the time I would go back, it was very much not that anymore. Right. I mean, I still feel like, I mean, I'd love anytime a movie was shot in New York in the 70s, like I'm all in, right? Like I love that look and that vibe. And
I'm thinking like Taxi Driver.
Yes, absolutely. Anything, right? Yeah. Like Taking a Pelham 1-2-3, like every movie that was shot there. So yes, it is not that place anymore. You're right. I think for me as an outsider, I've never lived there. I can still feel that vibe, you know, in times, bits and places here and there, different times sure. of day, which always makes me happy. So yeah, I want the book to have elements of exactly what you're saying that original Mirage book was, and you said unkempt, which I think is a great way of saying it, and you know, I say raw and grimy, and I want some of that element just in the tone, the look, the subject matter, everything. These first four issues, you know, each one focuses on a different turtle. Raphael's up first, and that he's the focus of issue one.
Joel on that, right?
Yeah, Joel Jones is doing that one. Then Raphael Albuquerque does Mikey in issue two, and Cliff Chang does Leo in issue three, and then Chris Burnham's doing Donnie in issue four and in the alpha issue, like you mentioned. So those issues kind of pick up with where are the guys, what have they been up to, what kind of situation are they in since we saw them last. Some time has passed since the end of Sophie's run. And those stories, again, kind of set the bar of this is kind of what we're going for. And I think, you know, not just in terms of that griminess, but in terms of giving them a little bit of an edge. You know, some of them I'm coming at from the perspective of a father who, my son is 18 now and, you know, is graduating high school. And in my mind, that's a little bit how I'm looking at these guys, not to pin them at a particular age, but, you know, they're still the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but you feel like they're a little more grown up. You know, they're not 13 years old, right? Like they've been through a lot, especially for teens. Like they have lived... Mm-hmm. They have lived a crazy life, and I like them getting to that point. You know, when you get to 18, 19, those are, I think for everybody, those are challenging years where you're having to make huge decisions that can shape the rest of your life. And a lot of times you really don't even know who you are yet, right? Like you think you do. You think you've got, I think most of us felt like we had all the answers forever that we're ever going to need invincible. When you're 18. Right. And then turns maybe 6 months later, you find out, oh my God, I didn't know anything. I thought
I know literally nothing.
Right. I mean, I thought I've wanted to write comics when I was a kid, but I had no idea how to do that. So when I was in high school and going into college, I started out as a journalism major and thought, you know, I was going to be living in Atlanta, writing for the Atlanta Constitution. And then realized I hated journalism and didn't want to do that. And everything kind of fell apart for a bit after that. So I'm trying to channel some of that of like these brothers are in a point in their life where they've, for whatever reason that we'll get to, they find themselves in sort of different spots. And it's about, you know, one, who are these guys in their core? Who have they always been? I'm not trying to remake them into something they're not. But also I just like that idea of four brothers who have been so close, been through so much together, now finding themselves in a point in life where they're a little like the Beatles when you get to Abbey Road of they're maybe a bit different than they were when they started out, different points in their life, and like how do you move forward when you've all kind of changed a little bit.
Yeah, that's perfectly said too, because I was going to add, you know, this is not the Turtles of Mutant Mayhem where they're 12, 13 years old, maybe going right into high school if they were of that, you know, if they were going to do that. But being in your, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old, a lot of times that's where you do start to drift away from folks who you've been friends with most of your life. You start to become maybe not the person who you're eventually going to be, but the seeds are planted as a young person, you know, around 18, 19, 20 years old. Now, if I could go back in time and look 20-year-old Chris in the face, I would probably not like that kid very much. But I think that the seeds of who I eventually became were there. And I found that really interesting about what you had said there about how like these four brothers, they've been together, they fought together, things have happened to them. And when we pick up with your run, it's almost like the sort of splinting, not to make a pun there, the splinting has begun in a sense, and we have to figure out a way to get them back together.
That's a good title. Maybe we'll use that. Yeah, I think it's about them figuring out how do we make this work, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we know how it worked in the past, but I mean, relationships have to change and grow, whatever that relationship is, whether that's you and your siblings or your significant other. Like, as you change, they change. You have to figure out how to continue to make that work. And I think that'll be kind of one of the themes of the book, of Return to New York, of everything.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of going back and talking to your 16-year-old self and not liking them very much is exactly, you know, the point of one of the parts of my Thor run, you know, of like,
yeah, that's right.
Where Thor is literally hanging out with his 16-year-old self, right? His rambunctious young Viking self, and does not like him in the same way that the old King Thor doesn't like either one of the younger. So I think that's interesting to, you know, in some ways I am exactly the same person as I was when I first picked up a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comic in probably 1985 was when mm-hmm. I first discovered the book. In some ways I'm exactly the same. What I want to do, my passions have not changed one bit. In other ways, I am almost unrecognizable, would be to that kid. He'd be like, what? So I find that sort of stuff fascinating in life and let alone in just trying to communicate that very, very human struggle in some sense. So, cause even though I don't get to hang out with my 13-year-old self and my 85-year-old self, like those are still issues that we all have to figure out within ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so some of us just trying to speak to that in the form of Ninja Turtles punching bad guys.
The Ninja Turtles, the greatest vessel of deciding time and space and all these things. They just are. And that bleeds into my next question for you, which is that the Turtles are maybe one of the most flexible characters, not only in the medium, but in fiction. You know, they've had multiple different artists portray them, different writers, of course, along, you know, Eastman and Laird and all these folks have obviously put their stamp because they created the character. But think of all the different people who have written or drawn these characters, or not including the animated series and the live action movies and video games, the whole thing. So what kind of special Jason Aaron sauce do you think you want to add to the mythology of the TMNT legacy?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I don't know. I feel like that's maybe not for me to answer, right? Like that's for somebody else to figure out. I mean, you're absolutely right. I think these characters, more than maybe any other characters over the course of those 40 years, have been able to change and change again and stay relevant, like you said, in a lot of different formats and different ways. And I'm not sure what other character we could say that has done that much over that period of time. Yeah, I mean, working in Marvel, I'm working on characters who are much older and have remained relevant, but they haven't had that many different versions over that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And the Turtles, you know, have been always been able to buck that trend of feeling like, well, you know, okay, their time is done, and they'll drift away into the shadows and they pop right back out in a new and exciting way. But as someone who does that sort of thing for a living and just as a fan, I'm always fascinated by characters that are able to get kind of reimagined and stay relevant over decades and decades. So in terms of what I bring to the table, I mean, I think some of it, again, is not, I'm not trying to come in and reinvent the wheel and send the Turtles off into a radically different direction. Some of it is about going back to the very beginning and the root of, like, how did I discover these characters? What appealed to me about them? How did I first connect with them? How can I do that in a way that is relevant to today, right? Relevant to me emotionally and relevant to the world of today, which again, is what I try to do in everything I'm working on. I feel like with Turtles, it kind of came easy. And then I knew what my touchstone was. It was that original Mirage book. I kind of right away saw like what I want that story to be and what I felt like the kind of edge or grit I felt like I could bring to each of those characters. This is not going to be I'll tell you right now, it's not going to be a story that's going to dazzle you with its shocking plot twists. I guess I'll say it's not that kind of story. And I think it's important that it starts with issues that focus on the characters, right? It's character before plot. I mean, I still think we'll show you things you haven't seen before, but it starts with, do you like these guys, you know, or can I make you like them, regardless if you're just like, well, I'm here for Raphael and the rest of the guys can beat it or whatever. Like, I want to make you like each of them, enjoy hanging out with them, and enjoy what happens, the sparks that fly when we throw them all together.
And I think it's safe to say that throughout your career in comics, you've generally leaned into character-based narratives, and that would sort of lead your stories in interesting and compelling ways. You had mentioned earlier about how the first arc, our brothers, of course, are separated from each other. There's been some time that has passed since Sophie Campbell's run, which is ending here soon. How much of that decision was based on the purpose of spending some quality time with each brother individually and allowing the reader to get to know your version of Raph, Leo, Donnie, and Mikey?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a large part that it's, you know, it's a time-honored kind of setup to sort of divide the team up and then do a story of getting the band back together. But also, to me, again, it was an important theme of the story of just kind of showing where these guys at, and maybe they've started to go in a little bit different direction from each other, and how can they come back and make that work as once they're together again. Is that easy? Is that simple? Is it like riding a bike where everything fits and works exactly the way it did before? Is it difficult? Has it always been difficult? Is it more difficult now? Is it challenging in different ways? I think those are questions we explore, you know, over the course of really multiple issues.
Mm-hmm. I have one final question for you, Jason, because I feel like if we talked any more about TMNT, I would start to accidentally or purposefully start to try to mine you for info, and I don't want to do that to you. So we're just going to hope that that little conversation bit was enough for folks to get excited, if they're not already, which they should be, for your upcoming run on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But my final question for you is, and it brings us back around to what we were talking about earlier with the multiple titles you're working on here in 2024. As we talked about, you've been known before as sort of the company man at Marvel for, you know, helping curate their universe for basically 20 years. And I know it's only March, but this feels like we're entering a brand new era for Jason Aaron. And so I realize this is kind of a big question, but at the end of this year, with everyone having already had a chance to read TMNT and Uncle Scrooge and Face Full of Bullets and everything else that you'll be working on in 2024, what do you hope fans take away from this? And ultimately, what do you hope you take away from this year of writing?
That's a good question. It's a little hard for me to answer, and that, you know, certainly once we're looking back on this year, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles will be one of the big hallmarks for me. There may be a couple more that you don't know about yet. So all those things, you know, we mentioned, like this, like I said, this kind of wild array of characters I've been able to work on. For me, and really for our industry in general, I think everybody's hungry for something new and fresh, but also in some ways familiar, like fresh takes on characters we know, like Transformers, like the new Thundercats book by Declan Shalvey that's doing so well. There's felt like some uncertainty coming into this year. There's still a lot of uncertainty, you know, and the election coming in November, and just how things are going to look business wise. And I think all the creators I know are really, really excited to kind of step up to that challenge and take big swings, whether that's in work for hire, you know, company owned properties, or that's their creator owned work. I think everybody kind of wants to shoot for the stars this year. And that's definitely how I felt, where I very much have entered this phase of my career that's feels like, you know, kind of the second act, hopefully the second act, not the third act. And the third act still a bit away, but it feels like a big second act. And that the first act was very much, like you said, focused on Marvel and creator owned work outside of that. And now I'm able to expand my horizons and work on all these different exciting properties, you know, all across the map, while also be doing some new creator-owned stuff. And then that's going to be the plan going forward. You know, Turtles will be a thing. Like I said, I kind of wanted to step away from ongoing long-term commitments for a bit, and I did. And then Turtles came along, and I couldn't say no to that. And so, you know, that one's a longer commitment, and there might be another one, you know, in the mix that fits that bill too. But I just feel really excited and lucky that I'm getting to work on all this kind of stuff at once. And I feel, you know, I've always felt like I've been lucky in that I'm able to kind of jump from one cool thing to the next over the course of my career. I feel that kind of, you know, times a thousand right now, and just really, really excited about everything I'm getting to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's very exciting, especially, you know, from a fan's perspective, as I said earlier, giant fan of yours, and it's really cool to just kind of see you in a sense. And this is weird to say about someone who has done as much as you have, but it kind of feels like you're spreading your wings a little bit and kind of getting out there and trying different titles that I would have never expected you to do. I mean, go back in time 7 to 8 years ago and ask me, hey, you know that Thor run you really like? What would you think of this guy's also doing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? I'd be like, I mean, that's really odd, but yeah, absolutely. Please do. Let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, that excites me too. You know, I mean, just jumping from one title at Marvel to another was exciting, but not as like a surprising, I guess, like, oh, this guy's writing one Marvel title, is writing another one. Yeah, jumping to these sort of properties where it feels so fresh and new in terms of everything I've done before, that gets me really excited, because that's the way I consume. Like, I'm the guy who loves, you know, reads Uncle Scrooge comics. I read, you know, Berserker. I read Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, I read all these things and already get enjoyment from them. Like, I read a variety of different kind of genres and properties. And so that's what I want to do as a writer as well. I want to churn out all different kind of stuff. And I feel like I'm getting to live that very much to the max right now. And that's not going to be just, you know, my plan for this year. Like, that is the plan going forward for me. Maybe I get to the point someday where I want to settle down and be exclusive to somebody else again. But I think for now I am enjoying, you know, like you said, spreading my wings and taking any call that comes my way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Jason, I want to thank you once again for coming onto the show and discussing your work. You know, as we finish our conversation and I can finally drop this, I've said it multiple times now, so there's really no facade anymore, but you are undoubtedly one of my favorite creators working in comics and have been since my introduction to the medium. So I'm truly just thrilled for you and everything that you've done so far this year and what you'll continue to do for the rest of 2024.
Well, thanks. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
And also, as we were talking there, I can't remember what point I realized this, but we were talking about Patrick Queen and Derrick Henry. Those are both Alabama alumni. Why did I not connect the dots there?
Well, Patrick Queen didn't go to Alabama.
He didn't? He wasn't a linebacker for Alabama?
Did he go to Auburn?
No, he went to LSU. Dang it. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah, Derrick Henry, one of the greats. I got a Derrick Henry jersey in my in my closet. I love Derrick Henry.
Can I buy that from you now that he's on the Ravens? Or
no, sorry, that one's I break that one out when the team really needs me. Yeah. I break out when it gets serious. I break out the Derrick Henry jersey. If it gets really serious, I break out my old shaker. But that's only when, you know, times are looking dire.
Bleeding Cool, The Beat. I know you guys are listening right now. Mark it down. Make an article. Jason Aaron, super superstitious. He's a man of superstition. So just know that.
Just when it comes to football and no other areas of my life.
I'm the same way.
Look, whatever it takes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I have a Lamar jersey. That's not even it's one of those like military jerseys, the military jerseys they don't even wear. I wear that Lamar jersey for every major game that we have. And I can't anymore because I wore it during the Chiefs Ravens game and we lost. So that no longer has any luck in it left.
Yeah, its power.
Yeah. I have to wash it and pick a new one.
Yeah. Maybe you can recharge it in some way.
That's right. Well, Jason, I'm going to pass the baton off to you one last time. Is there anything you want to plug or any socials you want to highlight before we let you go?
No, I mean, I the easiest way to keep up with me and everything I'm working on is my Substack newsletter. If you just Google my name, that's easy to pull up, and I, you know, post semi-regularly, let you know what all I'm working on, what shows I'll be doing. I'm doing a lot more shows. I might be doing more shows this year than I have ever done in my life.
Love to hear that.
Cause I just started working with comic sketch art, so they make it so much easier. So I'm doing definitely doing more shows in the States than I've ever done before. And maybe a few overseas. So, there's a chance I'll be coming to your town wherever you live, and if you want to come by and say hi and talk about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or Nick Saban or pro wrestling, then, you know, I'm your guy.
Don't ask him what his favorite turtle is. He will not answer it.
Well, I'll tell you who my favorite wrestler is, but I won't tell you my favorite turtle.
Who's your favorite wrestler?
Well, you say that now. I don't know what I was going to say. Like, okay. I mean, my favorite has been MJF, but he's been hurt.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm still a big Kevin Owens fan, so I'd probably say Kevin Owens. Yeah.
Yeah. We need to get Daniel Warren on the show, Daniel Warren Johnson on the show, and have you two talk about wrestling currently. Cause I'm from the Attitude Era. I stopped watching in like 2004, 2005. Yeah. So, but you two both are big into wrestling, and I'd love to bring you both on, talk about comics and then talk about wrestling at the same time.
Sure. Yeah. Daniel and I have talked wrestling a little bit. Yeah. He's a big fan. And his, Do a Powerbomb was absolutely the best comic ever done about wrestling ever. Highly so recommend good. It.
Yeah. All right, Jason, I'm going to let you go. We'll have you on hopefully in the future at some point, maybe after the first trade of TMNT is out, and we can talk maybe spoilers at that time.
Cool. Maybe then I'll tell you who my favorite turtle is.
But probably not. All right. Thanks, Jason.
All right. Thank you.
All righty. There's that conversation with Jason Aaron. Once again, thank you so much, Jason, for coming back onto the show. This was his second time, as we said at the beginning of the show. Such a great conversation. Again, I'm just going to reiterate once again here at the end. One of my favorite creators currently and of all time. You know, I've said many times on the show that between Saga of Swamp Thing by Alan Moore or The Question by Dennis O'Neill and Dennis Cohen and Jason Aaron's 7 years on Thor, those are among my favorite runs in comics of all time. So forever will hold a special place in my heart, and just very grateful to sit down with him again. So Aaron, before we close out episode 152, I have one more question for you. Who's your favorite turtle?
Michelangelo. Duh.
Duh. Mikey. So why Mikey though? Why?
I just felt like, I mean, ever since I was a kid, I've gravitated toward, it was either him or Donatello.
Okay.
You know, because I was a bit of a nerd, but I also like just loved like the freeness that maybe Donatello is who I am, and maybe Michelangelo is who I want to be.
Oh, sure. So like maybe Mikey is your zodiac sign, and Donnie is your rising, your Venus.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Fair enough. Mine is Raphael. I've been pretty vocal about how I love, and I think I even say it in the conversation with Jason, that Raphael, I think, has like the Vegeta arc. You know, like he believes that he deserves this. He needs to have this. If he doesn't have this, if he doesn't have the leadership of the team, if he's not recognized and respected for his contribution to the team, then he is nothing, and he'll fight for it to his death for it. And I find that so compelling. I love a character like that that will work themselves to the bone to prove how good they are, but in the end, their vigor and their tenacity will be their, you know, their monkey paw, essentially. It'll cripple them. In a way, like
the undoing,
it'll push people away. And I just find that really compelling. So once again, thank you, Jason. Next week on the show, Aaron, we're going to be keeping this interview train rolling. Next week on the show, we're going to have James Tynan and Christian Ward on the show talking about their new distillery horror book, Spectrograph. Now, Aaron, you were here for this conversation with both James and Christian. In less than 5 words, how would you describe that conversation with those two?
Fucking awesome.
There you go. That's a good one. All right. And we talked about it before, how James is not one to do many conversations here. He's very busy with Tiny Onion and the 38 titles that he's writing currently. And then, you know, Christian's been on the show 4 times. So we have a true juxtaposition of these two creators.
And you can feel it in the conversation.
Yeah. Because
the conversation is so good, but we just like, we only got like 45 minutes with him, which is kind of, that's the curse of being in this, of interviewing very successful people with a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
You have to accept that you just don't have all the time in the world with them, but you make use of that time. And I think that that's one thing. Thank God we got this transcript because we were able to make use of the time that we had, because if we didn't, that would be a shit show.
100%. There were questions that we were trying to communicate to each other that we wanted to ask during the conversation. And we were like, we just don't have the time. Like,
yeah, don't do it.
You've said it before, Aaron, and I agree. quickest 45-minute conversation we've had here on the Oblivion Bar. Yeah. 100%. It's a great one too. So
we're like mentally like shut up.
Shut your mouth.
Not to James, but to each other. We're like, don't fucking ask that. Shut your mouth.
You're coming off stupid right now.
Shut up, Chris.
but tune in next week for that episode 153. Excited for everyone to finally read Spectrograph. Aaron and I were lucky enough to check out that first issue, and it is very good. It's typical Tynan Ward incredibleness. So be on the lookout for that. But that'll do it for episode 152. Aaron, please take us out of this episode.
Taken out. Subscribe to our podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Audible, iHeartRadio, wherever you listen to your podcast. That's where we are. Thank you to our patrons, Alex, Alice, Aaron, Botter from the Short Box, Brad B, Cassidy, Chris from the Bada Boom Pod, Chris J, Christy, David, Elliot, George, Greg from First Issue Club, Haley, Ham, Six, Jake from Spec Tales, Jake S, Jeremy, Kenny, Kyle, Losey, Mac, Miles, Mike, Robert, Sean, Travis, and Brad Lee from Combo Couples Counseling. Boom! Follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Blue Sky, and Threads, Oblivion Bar Pod. Thank you, Omnibus, for sponsoring the show. Use the link in our show notes to upgrade how you read comic books digitally because it's bitchin'. Official merch of the show can be found on our website, Oblivion Bar podcast.com. Thank you, Kevin Ziegler, for all of our Oblivion Bar art. He's at that Zig Zone on Instagram. Thank you, Dream Kid, for all of our musical themes. Thank you, DJ Skyvac, for our grid theme. Thank you, Fantasy Shop, for sponsoring the show. And don't forget to tip your bartenders 20% or more. Oh, you're a piece of shit!
I wonder if Aaron had a G Fuel this afternoon, everybody. I'm wondering. Did you or did you not?
I had like a sip of one. I had one from like 2 days ago or whatever the last time we recorded. I had it left on my desk and I was like, fuck it. Chug. There you go.
Performance energized is how you do it. OBP in the OBP.
Feel your grind. Feel your grind.
All right, everybody. That'll do it for episode 152. We will see you.
I just
you.
Love hanging out with my friend.
We are energized by comics and in each other's presence.
And our love
and
for each other.
And our love. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Oblivion Bar Podcast. We will see you next week for episode 153.
Yeah.